Mind has gotten terribly busy this morning, telling me all kinds of stuff that I don't want to hear. One of the things that it's telling me, and I think it probably tells me this on a regular basis, but often I am able to ignore it, you know, not so much as process it and be with it, but go, no, I don't want to hear that. So the line that it tells me is, did you hear Anne's talk? Oh my God, it was so good. Did you hear Meg? Oh, Meg and Billy, they were so good. Did you hear Regina? They were so good. Well, you got nothing to say. You can't, you know, why are you even on the lineup? So how many people are in the room? Are they leaving? Yeah, thanks, Shauna. Shauna, I have mine over there. I should have it on my hand because that's who's talking. And so, and I'm like, okay. So this morning anyway, right before you pointed at me and said you're on, I hear it. And so I go, oh, all right, but, you know, cognizant enough to go, wait, I didn't, you know, I could have pointed at the puppet over there, but wait, you know, I don't have to listen to that. So I'm at least aware of that. Gosh, seemed like I was going somewhere with that, but I don't know where. So I'm aware of that. That's the big news. So thanks for letting me share that. I don't know where that might go, but I guess what I want to say in addition, I'm going to play a song, which I seem to be rushing towards. But what I want to say in addition to that is, I guess I'm constantly amazed at how much of that BS flies under the radar, you know, that doesn't get called out. I see you, you know, Connie's favorite line from Revolver. You ain't me. I mean, right? I mean, that doesn't even get called up to that level. It's just, you know, and if you don't call it up, it doesn't get dealt with. Okay, Regina, thank you for letting me know. And Jay's teasing me. He says, peace out. No, really, he's staying. He's just bluffing me. So thank you all for being here. Okay, there's one more thing that I want to say before I play a song. That is that in this process, which I recognized this morning, I'm constantly assessing, how are we doing today? You know, are you getting anything today? And it's kind of like, you know, are you in God's good favor today? You know, and I don't see God as a, you know, a separate being somewhere going, you do good, you do bad. But still, it seems like there's a favor that I can be in or not in. And so there's a constant assessment of what's going on, and generally that flies right under the radar. Hey, Meg, thanks for joining. So what I was going to say with that is, there is a constant assessment going on, which is its own thing to be looked at. But there are times, there are days when I'm like, I feel really stagnant. You know, I just feel like nothing's moving, nothing's going anywhere. I think that those times are likely because all of this stuff is going on beneath the surface. It's not being brought to light. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here and dig up and see what comes up. But first, I'm going to play a song. I asked for a song while Regina was teaching, and this is what came up. So let me play it for you here.
not be here tonight if I had to choose. It's always the bigger things in life that seem to choose you. You can say what you want, believe what you will believe, yeah, but I'll take what I want and see what I need to see.
Quite the song, huh? Really amazing. I love the line she said, buried in the questions, you can find the answers. That's what I was talking about before I put the song on, right? It's like, bring it up. Let's look at it. Let's be willing to question. To bring all of it to question. Who am I? That's a real question, right? And we know that ego, thinking mind, seeks to answer that question. Well, I'll tell you who you are. As well as inner wisdom, who, of course, provides the real answers. But it's the willingness to question that provides the answers. Shauna says, let me pull that up. Gentle healing, one tip today, walked us through the process of finding the root of an upset. Thank you. You're welcome. all upset seems trivial after Regina's Tao teaching. And then she says, I have an appointment with a tree. Yeah, Regina was telling me that's where you go. And in fact, you know, you go out and you be with life, right? You be with life. You go there first. And in fact, that is also what this woman said in this song. You don't need the answers. Just close your eyes and remember everything is beautiful. So that feels like quite the gift, because when Regina was teaching and the song came up, what came in my mind was the old song, you know, everything is beautiful in its own way. and so I went to YouTube and I pulled it up and I'm like, oh, wow. And then this gift was there, and it is a gift. And it's all a gift, right? It's the willingness to open my eyes and see it as such. Of course it's a gift. All of life is a gift. You know, we've been talking about this week, this past week in gentle healing. You know, this is the miracle. This is the miracle that I would share, that I would give. So anywho, I don't know that I have anything else to say about that right this second. Yeah, it's maybe I do have more to say before I go on to this reading that I'm going to do. And that is that, you know, this trust that everything is, well, it is what it is, as Anne was talking about this morning, and everything is beautiful, and, you know, marching into that isness as Regina was leading us to do. Sorry, I'm apologizing for getting lost in that. I kind of just meandered right into it. And I don't know. It's fleeting. It's fleeting here. It doesn't want to stay in my head so I can share it with you. Yeah, I'm sorry. That thought is just gone. So it was good while it lasted. It was good for me. yeah, so I am going to go ahead and read. And what I want to do is, last week I started reading from, again, feeling a little stagnant, you know. It's like, what do I do now? And, you know, and it doesn't seem like right where I want to go with the journaling, which didn't seem to be firing on all cylinders, and yeah, blah, 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 blah. Lots of explanations for why I'm doing what I'm doing. But anyway, last week what I thought to do was to read through this section on the characteristics of God's teachers. And I began reading the first characteristic and the one that underlies all the other characteristics, which is trust. And so I want to finish that section on trust. After that, I would like to begin reading Locke Kelly's book, The Way of Effortless Mindfulness. I know, Don loved the book. I love the book. Ron Rates loved the book. And, you know, I was telling Regina, I was kind of wondering, you know, should I be reading some or whatever? And she said, you know, maybe you ought to read that Locke Kelly book. And I said, I just had that thought myself. So that's a confirmation. So anywho, we're going to start that. But first, I want to finish this section on trust. So here we go. I actually want to back up to that first small introductory paragraph before it. This is in the Course in Miracles Course in Miracles Manual for Teachers. It says, all differences among the sons of God are temporary. Nevertheless, in time, it can be said that the advanced teachers of God have the following characteristics. And again, the first one is trust. This is the foundation on which their ability to fulfill their function rests. Okay, so I want to say something about that one sentence. and that is, you know, this past week in gentle healing, we looked at our function or our calling. And I just threw that in the garbage over here, or the recycle bin. And Regina had written us a tip That I went over at some length last night, Gentle Healing, on what is required to fulfill your function. And she said there were four requirements, and I'll just go over them summarily. We must let go of judging of ourselves. We must be willing to say yes, even though we have no idea how we will succeed. We must realize that the service is for us. You know, you must realize the service is for you, right? You first. And then you must also realize that the service is not just for you. So anyway, this seems so related that I just can't bring myself to put that paper down. But it certainly points up this first line here, that trust is the foundation on which our ability to fulfill our function rests, right? So you get the calling, and what you have to do is you got to trust. You know, judging yourself gets in the way of that. Trust leads you to say yes. So again, trust is the foundation on which their ability to fulfill their function rests. Perception is a result of learning. In fact, perception is learning, because cause and effect are never separated. I teach only myself, right? The teachers of God have trust in the world because they have learned it is not governed by the laws the world made up. It is governed by a power which is in them but not of them, the Tao. It is this power that keeps all things safe. It is through this power that the teachers of God look on a forgiven world. And, you know, of course, that's what Regina was telling us a moment ago. She was saying, you know, if you really knew that you were the, my words, potentiality of all things, the perfect, pure potentiality of all things, if you really knew that, I mean, you know, that's like, there's no non-existence to be afraid of. There's no threat. What can threaten potentiality? Nothing, right? So if you really knew that, then of course you would trust on everything. That is looking on a forgiven world. It says, when this power has been experienced, it is impossible to trust one's own petty strength again. Who would attempt to fly with the tiny wings of a sparrow when the mighty power of an eagle has been given him? And who would place his faith in the shabby offerings of the ego when the gifts of God are laid before him? What is it that induces them to make the shift? And it's an excellent question, right? It's like, okay, I mean, if I can buy for a minute, right? This unlimited potentiality, this fountainhead of life is what I am. Why in the world would I want to be anything other than that? Right? What causes me cling to these attributes of the temporal, these, you know, oh, I like that Jacqueline, I'm going to stick with her. She's going to die in a couple years, or, you know, 10 or 20 or 30 or whatever. But, you know, and she doesn't do a lot of stuff really well. And she, you know, she got all these faults, but I love her, and I'm going to, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. Why would I want to be this little bitty, what they say, sparrow, when I can claim the truth of what I am? And I guess the only question for me is, while you might glimpse it, you might go, I like that idea. Well, you know, that's not really buying it, right? It's like there's disbelief, there's doubt. And what is that but the lack of trust? So let's look at this some more. Who would place faith in his shabby offerings of the ego when the gifts of God, which is what we've been talking about, are laid before him? What is it that induces them to make the shift? First, they must go through what might be called a period of undoing. This need not be painful, but is usually so experienced. Yeah, well, it's been my experience. It is painful. It is, you know, as you're prying my fingers off this thing that I love, it's painful. I don't want to let go. Of course, this is, in my opinion, talking about purification. Oh, and it says that. It seems as if things are being taken away. Pulled from my hands. It seems as if things are being taken away, and it is rarely understood initially that their lack of value is merely being recognized. You know, again, it's all a choice. If you really saw eagle sparrow, right? Everything, nothing. Eternal, temporal. It'd be easy. You know, that's the difference. That's the distinction that we're making. And all of this over here, you just see its lack of value. How can lack of value be perceived unless the perceiver is in a position where he must see things in a different light? He is not yet at a point at which he can make the shift entirely internally. And so the plan will sometimes call for changes in what seem to be external circumstances. These changes are always helpful. When the teacher of God has learned that much, he goes on to the second stage. And let me just say that that first line, I don't know that I'd seen the significance of that in the past. He is not yet at a point at which he can make the shift entirely internally. Why not? Because all of this stuff is going on, like I said a while ago, under the radar, right? I mean, it's just like, you know, if I could really get in there and dig it all out and sit in my cave or in my bedroom or wherever and just dig all that out, that'd be great. But that's not how it works. So we're going to look to external circumstances to, like, shake things up a little bit. So I don't know if this, yeah, I've always read this as saying, so, you know, we might need to change, you know, where you live or where you work or, but I think there might be more of a subtlety involved here than that. I think this points to the need to be a happy learner. We talked about this a little bit last night in General Healing, and I talked about how we've all always admired Regina for her ability to just, like, go out there and get it. You know, it's like, oh, here's another opportunity, and here's one, and here's, you know, and take them as she finds them. And so that's, I think that's really what's being pointed to here is to note that the external gives us the opportunity to purify, to teach what we would learn, the opportunity to heal. And so the plan will sometimes call for changes in what seem to be external circumstances, and these changes are always helpful. When the teacher of God has learned that much, he goes on to the second stage. Next, the teacher of God must go through a period of sorting out. This is always somewhat difficult because, having learned that the changes in his life are always helpful, okay, so I've become the happy learner, right? Having learned that the changes in his life are always helpful, he must now decide all things on the basis of whether they increase the helpfulness or hamper it, right? What's it for? What's it for? What's going on here? What can this teach me? How can I get the gusto from this? Not, which is often my default position. Now, does that make me right or wrong? I mean, I'm sorry, that's what comes up for me. It just does. That's not the question. Thanks, Meg. Meg says it's perfect reading for this mind today. Having learned that the changes in his life are always helpful, he must now decide all things on the basis of whether they increase the helpfulness or hamper it. Yeah, and the other thing that that hampers this healing is our desire to be comfortable. And I'm speaking for myself, but I think it's generally generalizable. We want to be comfortable. We don't want to experience pain. And I don't know about for the rest of you, but I want to be right. So, yeah. He will find that many, if not most, of the things he valued before, and I put value on them because they make me right. They make me comfortable. They seemingly keep me from pain. Those are the things that I value, and I value them for that reason. He will find that many, if not most, of the things he valued before will hinder his ability to transfer what he has learned to new situations as they arise. Because he has valued what is really valueless, he will not generalize the lesson for fear of loss and sacrifice. And we talked about that a little bit in, I think, I left that part in the tip yesterday, in the tip. You know, fear is always based on, you know, a belief in lack and limitation. A belief in myself is this temporal thing. I'm the sparrow, not the ego. Don't try to tell me I'm an eagle. I know I'm a sparrow, right? I know I'm limited. I'll, of course, you know, I'm being facetious. But that's, you know, that's what's going on here. Yeah, because he has valued what is really valueless, he will not generalize the lesson for fear of loss and sacrifice. It takes great learning to understand that all things, events, encounters, and circumstances are helpful. It takes great learning to understand that all things, events, encounters, and circumstances are helpful. Yeah, let's throw those doors open. I mean, again, it's like, gosh, what's that section, chapter 31, rules for decision. You know, once you make the decision about what it's for my healing, then it will all be helpful. You know, you don't go through it and you know, what ego does is goes through an event and goes, how was that helpful? Yeah. You make the decision up front. But it does say here that it takes great learning to do that. And I think we could substitute the words great learning for repetition, repetition, repetition. It takes great learning to understand that all things, events, encounters, and circumstances are helpful. It is only to the extent to which they are helpful that any degree of reality should be accorded them in this world of illusion. The word value can apply to nothing else. yeah, is it helpful or not? You know, it's a bridge for me. It seems like a bridge thought. It says any degree of reality, and that this is the only thing that's valued. That is the only value here. It's like, is it serving your healing? The third stage to which the teachers of God must go can be called a period of relinquishment. If this is interpreted as giving up the desirable, it will engender enormous conflict. Few teachers of God escape this distress entirely. Now, this is interesting because we've already gone through the first two stages. The first, wait, I'll tell you what the first is, a period of undoing, right, where you recognize you begin to recognize that the things upon which you placed value are not actually valuable. And it might entail some changes. The second stage, a period of sorting out, where you come to recognize that the only value that can really be applied to anything is... the question of whether or not it's helpful to your healing. And then this third period, this third stage is called a period of relinquishment. And it talks about this being a period, if this is interpreted as giving up the desirable, it will engender enormous conflict. But it seems to me if you've been through those other two stages, you know, I don't have a tidy mind, but I like things to be nice and tidy, right? You know, stage one's over, stage two's over, and then I want stage three to start. And if we've done stage one, stage two, it shouldn't be painful. But that's not my experience. That's not my experience at all. the third stage to which the teachers of God must go can be called a period of relinquishment. If this is interpreted as giving up the desirable, it will engender enormous conflict. Few teachers of God escape this distress entirely. There is, however, no point in sorting out the valuable from the valueless unless the next, this is the next step, identifies it very clearly. There is, however, no point in sorting out the valuable from the valueless unless the next obvious step is taken. The third step is rarely, if ever, begun until the second step is complete. Therefore, this is really interesting, as I was just complaining that it wasn't nice and neat like this. Therefore, the period of overlap is apt to be one in which the teacher of God feels called upon to sacrifice his own best interests on behalf of truth. He has not realized as yet how wholly impossible such a demand would be. He can learn this only as he actually does give up the valueless. Through this, he learns that where he anticipated grief, he finds a happy lightheartedness instead. Where he thought something was asked of him, he finds a gift bestowed on him. And that's beautiful, frankly. It's interesting that this is separated in this manual, in this Course in Miracles, that this is separated, I mean, really seemingly cleanly here. The third step is rarely, if ever, begun until the second is complete. So this whole period of separating the a period of sorting out, separating the valuable from the valueless, it just seems very strange to me that that is separate from the relinquishment of the same. I mean, I don't know how you really get to where they're talking about here in the third step without actually, you know, handing it over, you know, giving your stuff away, or, you know, getting rid of the stuff that doesn't serve you, or, you know, something. It just seems very strange that they would be so, that this sentence would even appear. The third step is rarely, if ever, begun until the second is complete. I just want to read that again. Therefore, the period of overlap is apt to be one in which the teacher of God feels called upon to sacrifice his own best interest on behalf of truth. He has not realized as yet how wholly impossible such a demand would be. You know, of course, my own best interests lie in figuring out who my own is, right? Who I actually am. That much is obvious to me. He can learn this only as he actually does give up the valueless. Through this, he learns that where he anticipated grief, he finds a happy lightheartedness instead. Where he thought something was asked of him. He finds a gift bestowed on him. Excuse me. Yeah, and that's certainly been my experience. In fact, I wrote here in the margins, stepping through the fear. And for me, I have gone through a period like this. I've certainly gone through the, hey, you know, sell all my belongings, quit the job, give up the job for life, the retirement, blah, 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 and move to wherever seems to be most helpful. I mean, so in a form sense, there's no question that we've been through this. But this other part of this for me was, in fact, a period of stepping through the fear. Again, what do I think is valuable? Those things that will keep me comfortable, liked, right, out of pain. And so the fear is that if I don't do what this guy says, I will be uncomfortable. I'll be shown up for a fraud, which for me is the other side of being right. That's well worth looking at. I probably ought to write that down. but, you know, so if I don't do what this guy tells me, I'm going to be uncomfortable. I'm going to be in pain. I'm going to be exposed as a fraud. And to see those things and then go, okay, but I'm doing it anyway. You know, I hear what you're telling me, ego, but I'm doing it anyway. I am going to step through this fear. This for me, for a while was a very intense period of, what do they call it? Relinquishment, a very intense period of relinquishment. You know, there's more. As I said at the beginning of this thing, there's more to be let go. But my experience has been exactly this, where you anticipate grief. You're like, oh my God, I'm so glad I don't have all that stuff anymore. You know, I mean, whether it's physical stuff or, you know, I'm so glad that I'm not afraid to pick up the phone and call people that need to be called. I used to hate to make phone calls. Still not a big fan, but, you know, but it's always like, oh, that was a great phone call. I can't believe I would. I mean, it always is like that. Every time I have ever consciously said, you know, screw it, I am just stepping right through this fear, that lightheartedness was a natural result. You know, and that is the gift. Where he thought something was asked of him, he finds a gift bestowed on him. That lightheartedness, that freedom, that liberation from this, that is the gift. It is the gift. And it's always there when you step through the fear. Okay, so those are the first three stages, apparently. I don't know, maybe this is part of the third stage because it didn't actually call it a different stage. So again, through this period of relinquishment, he learns that where he anticipated grief, he finds a happy lightheartedness instead. Where he thought something was asked of him, he finds a gift bestowed on him. Now comes a period of settling down. A period of settling down. This is a quiet time in which the teacher of God rests a while in reasonable peace. Now he consolidates his learning. Now he begins to see the transfer value of what he has learned. You know, the last 50 times I stepped through my fear, it was fabulous. Let's do it again. and you can see this. What are we learning all along? We're learning what's valuable and what's valueless. We're learning the result of relinquishment of the valueless. And if that's our experience, why wouldn't we be going, okay, now I can apply here and here and here. And so it's a party in celebration of what we've learned so far. And it calls it a period of settling down. Now he begins to see the transfer value of what he has learned. Its potential is literally staggering. Yay. And the teacher of God is now at a point in his progress at which he sees in it his whole way out. Wow. If I could do that with everything, freedom. Give up what you do not want and keep what you do. How simple is the obvious? If they hadn't said that, I would have. How simple is the obvious? Give up what you do not want and keep what you do. How simple is the obvious and how easy to do? The teacher of God needs this period of respite. Oh, look at this next sentence. He has not yet come as far as he thinks. Enjoy it while you can, baby. So let's see what it tells us after that. Okay. Needs this period of respite. He has not yet come as far as he thinks. Yet when he is ready to go on, he goes with mighty companions beside him. Now he rests a while and gathers them before going on. He will not go on from here alone. You know, and I know that we often speak of each other as mighty companions, and certainly that has been my experience, that, you know, here you guys are. my sangha, my community is here. You know, you all listen to me cry. You listen to me celebrate. You all of it. You're here with me, and there's no question that you guys are my mighty companions. However, I wonder, it just feels like something else might be being said here. Yeah. Awakening together, healing with you together, Dylan says. Yeah. It just feels like these mighty companions, I don't know that that's referring to my brothers. I don't know that the mighty companions aren't this lightheartedness, this sense of liberation, this vision, like we've been talking about in Gentle Healing One. Those are indeed mighty companions. Now he rests a while and gathers them before going on. He will not go on from here alone. The next stage is indeed a period of unsettling. The one before was a period of settling down. All right, now that we've gathered our truth, now that we've gathered our strength and our tools, right? We go into this period of unsettling. Now must the teacher of God understand that he did not really know what was valuable and what was valueless. It's just bizarre, isn't it? It says all that he really learned so far was that he did not want the valueless and that he did want the valuable. Let's read some more. We'll see if we can figure this out. Yet his own sorting out was meaningless in teaching him the difference. The idea of sacrifice so central to his thought system had made it impossible for him to judge. And that's amazing. It's just amazing to me how big our blind spots are. You know, I got this. I'm doing this. Yeah. And then you get here. You know, what are we? We're four stages in, right? And it's like, what? You're telling me I can't even discern what's valuable from valueless because this fear in me, this idea of sacrifice is so embedded in me that I'm still not able to cleanly discern what's valuable and what's valueless. You know, I heard Regina talk in a recording recently about how people on the spiritual path will hide things from themselves. Some here where subconsciously decide what they want to do, and they'll go, oh, so I had the guidance to do this thing that I really want to do. And, you know, and they're lying to themselves even. And I think that that's the phenomena that's being talked about here. You know, we're like, yeah, I got it. But, you know, more digging, more unsettling may be required to get to the truth of it. Yeah, Susan says it sounds familiar. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We all do it. Yeah. So again, I'm going to start at the top here. The next stage is indeed a period of unsettling. Now must the teacher of God understand that he did not really know what was valuable and what was valueless. All he really learned so far was that he did not want the valueless and that he did want the valuable. Yet his own sorting out was meaningless in teaching him the difference. The idea of sacrifice, so central to his thought system, had made it impossible for him to judge. He thought he had learned willingness, but now he sees that he does not know what the willingness is for. And now he must attain a state that may remain impossible for a long, long, too long time. He must learn to lay all judgment aside and ask only what he really wants in every circumstance. And this is actually brilliant because, again, you know, usually when we talk about judgment, just because of the way that we're wired, we think of it as, oh, I don't like her. I don't like the way he did that. I don't, you know. But this is like, it's all got to be laid aside. It just told us it's impossible for us to say what's good and what's bad. You know, as we've heard earlier in A Course in Miracles, we don't know our advances from our retreats. So when I started out talking this afternoon about, you know, I'm like always judging where I am on the path and how I'm doing, it's all BS, right? I am not in a position to judge. I don't know what's good from what's bad. I have to lay all of that aside and ask, here's the key question, what do I want? What do I want in every circumstance? What do I want? Not just in those times when I go, oh, I judged her and I shouldn't have done it. No, in every circumstance, what do I want? I give this to you. Show me what I want. Show me what you would have me see. You know what? I know what I want. Oh, and healing. I just don't know what it looks like or how to get there. So, you know, give me vision. He must learn to lay all judgment aside and ask only what he really wants in every circumstance. Were not each step in this direction so heavily reinforced, it would be hard indeed. And I don't know, I got to say, we're not each step in this direction so heavily reinforced. I think that's where you get shown again and again and again that you don't know what you want. You know, where you try and push life around, you go, no, that wasn't it. So to me, this reinforcement points to, you know, A Course in Miracles tells us, again, early on, Holy Spirit teaches through contrast. You know, what happens when I try and push things around? Well, it wasn't what I really wanted. The only way I can know what I really want is that total surrender. You tell me. Were not each step in this direction so heavily reinforced, it would be hard indeed. Okay. And finally, there is a period of achievement. It is here that learning is consolidated. Now, what was seen as merely shadows before becomes solid gains. Glimpses, right? What was glimpses before becomes solid gains to be counted on in all emergencies, quote unquote emergencies, it's got it in quotes. Now what was seen as merely shadows before becomes solid gains to be counted on in all emergencies as well as tranquil times. Indeed, the tranquility is their result. The outcome of honest learning, consistency of thought, and full transfer. This is the stage of real peace. For here is heaven's state fully reflected, right? And this is what Regina was talking about a while ago. Total non-resistance, total allowance. You know, what is there to resist? Why would anything need to be different? This surrendered state that we arrive at is a reflection of the isness. Anything can happen. This is the stage of real peace, for here is heaven's state fully reflected. From here, the way to heaven is open and easy. In fact, it is here. Who would go anywhere if peace of mind is already complete? And who would seek to change tranquility for something more desirable? What could be more desirable than this? And that's the end of the reading on trust. That's some powerful stuff. I got to tell you, I'm a whole lot more tranquil than when we started. thanks for letting me share that. I'm not going to read the rest of the, I don't think. I'll let you know less next week whether I'm going to read the rest of these traits. I think that I'm going to move on to Log Kelly's book is what's most helpful, but I will spend some time in contemplation of that question. You guys are my mighty companions, and I'm grateful for that. So thank you for allowing me to share with you in all of this that we go through together. I'm so grateful. I love you guys.